found out all grateful. Sorry if I didn't sit down. Grateful to be sober and in a meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous. Haven't done this in a long time. I want you to know that I prayed before I came. I asked God to speak through me and deliver the message that can be useful. I have not drank since September 26, 1988. I have 20 years. My story is a bit controversial, and I prayed about that too. And the last thing I would ever want to do is speak ill of Alcoholics Anonymous or the 12 steps or offend anybody. So I will just tell my story. I started using at a young age, I guess we all did. I grew up right outside San Francisco. I went through desegregation as a young teen. And a very good friend of mine told me that if I hadn't drank, I probably wouldn't have lived through it. It was a war zone. We had Black Panthers, we had Hell's Angels, we had kids disappearing off the street. I didn't understand it for a really long time, what had happened, and I read a really good book. I wanted to become a lawyer, and there was a book done by Thurgood Marshall who described the process of desegregation. It didn't happen until the 70s. And it was a really, really hard thing to go through. The race riots were incredibly deadly. I remember people having their fingers set on fire. A lot of us kept dogs. A lot of us were just hunted through the streets. It was incredibly brutal. So we kind of hung out in gangs. And I left there when I was about 15 and went into a deeper part of the ghetto. And it was like right up the street from the Cow Palace. And a young white person's life expectancy after dark was probably about 20 minutes. And we didn't go anywhere by ourselves. I can remember there was one night when this lady had driven up to the house, and she was older, and she had had a crowbar or something put through the windshield of her car at a stop sign, and they had mugged her by breaking her window, pulling out her keys, and she was terrified, and that was the way life was. I mean, it was really, really hard. It was really hard. We left San Francisco in 1981 when I had got hunted by a pack of dogs, and if I had had my kids with me, I don't know what would have happened, because they were all like, everybody kept German Shepherds, Great Danes, and some other dog that like ate people. And if they got out of the house, they would just start hunting people. And I was down jogging at a school one day, and I got really good at, like, hearing their chains around their neck. And this dog was, like, looking for a hole in the fence. And I was, like, looking for the dog, and I, like, outsmarted it and got over the fence and out. And if I had had my kids with me that day, they used to like to, like, dig in the sand and stuff. I wouldn't have made it out because there wasn't any trees. There was no other way. There was nowhere for me to go. And I was talking to my older children's father, and I said, you know, it's just time. I'm going to have to start carrying a gun. I just can't. I can't do this anymore. So we left and we moved down here. And he was this really bad guy. He was a really bad guy. He was affiliated and it was just a mess. And I had four little kids. I used with all my children. I drank. You know, in those days, we could, you could drink and drive. The cops would just, like, tell you, you know, put your car, get it out of the middle of the street and you park it. If they caught us with booze, they would just take it. It was done. And then just tell us to, like, go home. We didn't, like, put our kids in car seats. Seat belt them. My last child was born with cancer, and we didn't know it. I was pregnant with three other young ladies at that time, and the other two babies died. And I thought I was, like, doing okay, you know, because all I did was drink a little bit. And that was really, really rough. They found it when she was 3 years old. And she was my first miracle in the program. She had to be at the right place at the right time for them to find it, and they did. And she's 21 now, and I'm so grateful. I'm so grateful for her. You know, I haven't told my story in a long time. It was really dark, and I really hate telling it. It was just really, really dark. I landed here in 1988, and my younger children's father was trying to get out of going to jail for a long period of time. So, as a good wife, I tried to help him and figured, you know, if he went into AA or some kind of thing, he could, like, get out of going to jail. And I wound up getting sober, and he wound up going into the jail for about 5 years. And that was really hard on me. I really wanted my family. So I did everything they told me to do, and I came to meetings, and I worked those shitty steps, and I got a sponsor. In fact, I had a couple of sponsors because I was pretty crazy when I got here. I had used longer or drank longer than what I hadn't, and I was really, really angry. So when I first got here, I was, like, really, really angry. And I talked a lot about blowing stuff up. I just wanted to blow something up. And I didn't. I think I really thought about killing people when I got here. And I didn't because I had those four little kids. And there wasn't anybody out there to take care of them but me. And so I really had to consider that. And at that time, well, I had about 5 years sober at that time, and there was a lady that actually went out and killed somebody. And I was, like, listening to that pretty darn close, you know, and trying to see if it was going to work for her, and it didn't. And I really thought I could get out of jail free card, you know, because I was sober. Why not? I was in therapy for 8 years, and I really needed every day of it. It took me 8 months to come to terms with being an alcoholic. I just showed up here. I didn't really think I had a drinking problem. I knew I had a living problem, but I didn't think I had a drinking problem, and it took 8 months for me to figure out that most people don't drink out of a mayonnaise jar. And I would only have two a day, so therefore I didn't have a drinking problem. And the people that I hung out with drank a lot more than two mayonnaise jars a day. So, being sober, it's been, I'm not sure that I would wish my journey of recovery on anyone, but it's just mine. It's just mine. I love my God. There isn't anything worth the relationship that I have with my higher power. And in coming back here, I spent a lot of time, like, I knew when people found out that I had, like, a lot of time, they would be like, oh, you know, you got to share. And I was like, yeah, I don't want to. I don't want to sponsor anybody. I don't want to share. I don't want to do anything. I'm just here to support my son, and I don't want to do any of that. And in coming here, I spent a lot of time thinking about what do I have as a person of time have that a newcomer doesn't. And I would say it's my relationship with my higher power. We have gone through a lot together. There isn't anything. I still have a lot of room to grow. I still have a lot of misconceptions about what being sober is about. I have spent a lot of time thinking that I deserve that, you know, okay, God, I'm sober and you owe me. And I've done everything that you wanted me to do. You owe me. That's a big one. I am a big victim, and it's time we turn the tables on this, and this is what I want. And, you know, I didn't get it. It sucked. I started a business 10 years ago, and I shut it down. That really, really rocked my world, because I just thought God owed me, you know? Okay, I've done everything, now I want the money, come on. And it didn't happen. So, and I didn't drink over it. And I got really angry. And somebody told me a long time ago that God could handle it if I was angry. And that was all she wrote, man. I just went for years. And it's like, you know, in my prayers when I had about 2 years, I decided that I had no more fear of my higher power. And I used to say, you know what, when I die, I'm going looking for him. I'm going to look for him, and we are going to have a discussion. Blow me into hell, I don't care, because I came from hell. There isn't anything I figured that was left to be done. And, you know, every one of those questions, I wrote out all these things that I wanted answered. And over the years, every every one of them has been answered to my satisfaction, and I have made peace with it all. And I'm very grateful for that. I'm very grateful for the higher power that I found here, in spite of myself. I worked steps 1 through 12 for the first 5 years I was here. I worked them again when I had 17 years. And if I felt the need, I would work them again. At 2 years sober, I knew that I could no longer face the day without prayer and meditation. And up until year 20, you could probably count on one hand the days that I missed. I just didn't want to face the day without my God and being okay. And I'm grateful for that. I quit coming to meetings. I had 5 years because I got caught up in principles before personalities. There's a couple of you who may remember me from 100 years ago. And what I did was, in those days, things were a little different. I don't know, we argued a lot, I guess. And I used to sit in the back of the meetings, and I would talk long stuff about people, and I would take everybody's inventory, and I would gossip really bad about everyone. And I had a small group of people that I hung out with, and I waited for my younger children's father to come out of prison. And I just thought alcohol was the only thing that was wrong. And when he got out, he had already had some time, and he was sober, and we started going to meetings, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, he started hanging out with all these girls, and all this stuff started happening, and I was really hurt. And I couldn't figure out where was the respect? And, you know, we come in here and we just are who we are. And I knew that I could not stay sober sitting across the table from somebody who was going out with my husband. And I knew I couldn't handle everybody taking sides. And I had been witness to two other occasions where similar circumstances had happened, and people took sides, and there was all this stuff being rattled off in meetings, and I knew I couldn't do that. So I quit coming, and it was really hard on me. I had lots and lots of dreams where I thought that the meetings were actually stronger than my conscious contact with my God. And I found out that no, they weren't. I've heard since then, you know, and I've thought about it, and it was like, you know, I could have gone to other meetings and maybe out of town or something, but I just got such a resentment. I got such a resentment. I haven't seen any of those people since I've been coming back. And, you know, when I was out there, when I stopped coming to meetings, you know, those 5 years really did something to me because I never did anything out there to, I was always a representative of the 12 steps, always. And I never wanted to do anything, say anything, or cause anyone to not come to these meetings. So it was this huge duality that was going on. And over the years, I moved into this neighborhood. I bought a house and moved into this neighborhood where there's a lot of alcoholics there. And this has just been recently. And quite about 10 years ago or so, I got targeted by a gang in the neighborhood. And you know, it was really hard on me, but I never wanted to be a person where if I ever saw those people in a meeting, I wouldn't be able to welcome them. And we went through some hairy times. I had men at the end of my driveway just making faces at me, wanting me to come out. And I used to look around like I'm old, you know, what's the deal? It's not happening. I'm just getting old. So I just took my glasses off so I couldn't see them. And then when they were in the, these were young men. And I knew where they were going. I knew what was happening to them. And the best I could do was not cause a problem for them coming in here. And they would do, they would jump up and down in their driveway and call me this and that and the other. And I couldn't figure it out because I'm old. So what I started doing was just wearing my headphones and no glasses. And I caught him trying to get in my house, and so I put cameras in. And, you know, it was pretty bad. My dog was killed, and you know what I figured out from all that stuff was really hard. What I finally figured out was that when you get an invitation to war, it's like a bad dinner invitation. You don't have to accept it. And I was in my garage one day, and I was praying, and you know, there's all this stuff going on outside my driveway, and I'm just watching it, and I'm praying, and I'm watching it, and I'm praying, and what came to me was that, you know, Marcy, any day you want to or see fit your life, where you came from is at the end of your driveway, and you're welcome to it any day you want it back. And we went through that for 8 years, and they finally went on their way, and I felt really bad for them, because I remember back when I was drinking, see, these men would come over to my house, or our house at the time, and they'd start drinking, and we'd be playing dominoes, you know, and they would start talking about the life they had in prison. And I'd be sitting there listening, and I knew where those young men were going, and I knew what was going to happen to them. And these men they came to my house, were not small, they were not weak, but that's a hard life. It's a hard life. And I felt, I prayed for them. In the midst of all that ugliness, in the midst of all that, you know, they'd rather pull my hair and break my teeth, I prayed for them. And that was really hard. What I know today is that I have the ability to be honest with you, if you tell me you're drinking, tell me you want help, I'm going to tell you where to get it. And whether you pick it up from there or not is up to them. And I'm okay with that. I'm okay with that. I went to church for a while. They had 12 steps there, and I thought, well, I'll try that, you know. And that didn't work out so good for me because I thought they wanted AA friends, but they really didn't. They wanted theirs, and I, the 12 steps are the 12 steps are the 12 steps. It was how I learned it, was how I gave it. And it just did not go over well. So, but there was a young man there that I met. And before he went to jail, I was able to talk to him. And I can't stand the idea of people going to jail without somebody telling them the truth. And so I pray and I just tell them. And I was in... I did a lot of H&I. The night before they operated on my daughter, we went in, and on the women's side at that time, I don't know, they may still do it. They used to let us into, like, the main population thing, you know? And here I was, you know, I got the three-year-old kid, and I'm praying for her to die because they don't live. She had this really, really severe type of cancer. She was 6 months from being terminal. They told me they were going to operate on her for the rest of her life. And I just figured that it was better for her to die at three than to go through that for the rest of her life. And, you know, she walked out of there and the program was there. The lady that took her out of my arms said, I'm from the program. I'm going to take care of your kid. And she took her. And there were people at the hospital every day. And here are these women in this prison, this jail. They're locked up, you know. And here's this little, I'm looking at this door. It's got like this little flap, you know, and this hand sticking out it. And they felt for me. I was really surprised at that. They felt for me. And she's doing really well. It's raining pretty good out there, huh? I don't know how much more I have to say except for that my son's a soldier and when he came back, you know, I was preparing for him to die, and he would call me at 2 a.m., tell me that he loved me and that, you know, he was going to be alive the next day. So I went into Pine. I just kind of slinked in there, you know, at the candlelight meetings because it was dark, and it was all newcomers, and I figured, you know, none of them would be there in a week anyway. And I would talk about my son dying and that I didn't want to drink. And those guys, they were there. They were there for me. And if you're in Pine, I just want to say thank you. Thank you. I wouldn't have made it. I wouldn't have made it. It was so hard. I was running a crew of six people and it was going in the toilet, and there were complaints, and this and that, and no sleep, and it was like that for 4 months. 4 months. It was just really horrible. And but I didn't drink. Today, at 20 years, I really dedicated my life to my children. And I didn't want them to go through what I went through. My mother was a drug addict. My grandfather was an alcoholic. His father was an alcoholic. My brother is a drug addict. My sister doesn't drink or use, but every one of her kids do. Which is kind of, I always just thought that it was just me. I just started drinking, and therefore, you know, if I had had this idyllic life, then my kids would have been okay, but I don't think the disease works that way. My sister's kids had an idyllic life, and every single one of them is an alcoholic. So, I don't know. I love my life today. Last Saturday morning, you know, I woke up and my daughter woke up before me and she came to my room and said, "Hey, are you awake?" And I said, "Yeah." And she came over and climbed into bed with me. I rescue Chihuahuas now. The smaller they are, the better I like them. Big giant woman and a little tiny dog. And then my son heard us up, and so he came into my room and sat in a chair. We just started talking for about an hour, you know, and just talking. And I thought, wow, you know, we have come so far. I would say out of all of that ugliness, I have a bond with my four children that you couldn't get any other way. I spent 6 years every Christmas apologizing to them for their horrible childhood, and I never thought that would end, but it finally did, and Christmases have gone to becoming Christmases, and I have this awesome bond with my kids. I had two professionals tell me that I couldn't. My older ones were unsavable, and that I should just kind of like, you know, let them go, do whatever. And they turned out okay. They turned out okay. So I'm very, very grateful to this program. As hard as it's been, as hard as I've been on the program, at 15 years, I had my chip put on my leg because that's the one thing. My kids always ask me for my chip when I die, and I keep them in my little dope bag. So I started giving them out to my kids and stuff, you know, because I just thought, well, so much for that tradition. The only way, you know, I always wanted to be buried with them, but that wasn't going to happen. So I had one tattooed on my leg, figuring, you know, get that one. So it's been highly worth it. I would say that. It's been really hard. I'm not one of those people that walked in here and became happy, joyous, and free. I did not walk into money. I did not land a perfect relationship. I did not land a great job. I would not give up what I have today for anything. And I have stood the test. I have stood the test. And if I have anything to share, if you come from a really bad background, you know, don't leave before the miracle, even if it takes a couple of years or 20. Just here. And if you have little kids and you're just really scared of what's going to happen to them, I just didn't give up. I wasn't perfect. I just didn't give up. And today I'm going to celebrate a Thanksgiving with my son home from the war. He won't be going back. And I didn't have to sell my house. He's not living in Texas. He came back with all of his little fingers. And there are parents that left businesses and homes and everything, walked away from everything to be with their kids in Texas, and I didn't have to do that. And I didn't get to be there when he came in. I was so mad because I didn't have the money to fly overseas to see him come back and march and do all that stuff. And I wasn't able to do a lot of that stuff. But you know what? When he got here, I was here. I was ready. And I was able to do things for him until he could stand on his own 2 feet. I was here and able to do that. And I'm so grateful for that. I'm so grateful for my kids and my family and my little chihuahuas. And with that, I'll just say thank you for letting me share.
Thank you, Martha. And we have a few minutes left. If you're not opposed to it, we could invite some questions.
Oh, that's fine. Yeah.
Okay. Please feel free to raise your hand and call any questions.
Writing them down and then sharing them with somebody else. Boy, that sucked. I hated doing those. In fact, my very first sponsor I did a 4-step with never spoke to me again. And I had to go get somebody, I had to go get a professional. And I don't know. Not everybody drinks out of a mayonnaise jar. It took me 8 months. I was in a meeting and I went, oh. You mean two doesn't count? I figured, you know, two drinks. That was it. I really like whiskey. No, you know what? I quit drinking because they told me I had to. They told me. I saw a guy named Don Nichols, and he suggested that I go to meetings and not drink. So I did what they said. And I came here mostly because, for a long time, because there was the other meetings, there was only like two or three at that time. Okay. Several. More than once. Almost hit by lightning a few times, I think. Not the same person. I would not walk over your dead body today. I would have before I came here.
What's the 23rd Psalm.
Blessed with that. Valley of the shadow of death. I know it well. Well, because I had suffered a lot of abuse, and I didn't feel that I had deserved it. And I felt that I was born the wrong color, in the wrong neighborhood, in the wrong place. I was no good at stealing. I was told, I wanted to rob banks. In fact, I learned to read so I could rob banks. And I wanted to, I wanted to be a bad guy. And this real bad guy, my children's younger father, got me drunk one night when I was wanting to do some stuff. And he told me what I could expect if I went to jail from a very real point of view. Told me I wasn't tough enough and not to do it. So that's when I decided to rob banks. I was pregnant at the time, and I didn't get away with much money. And ATMs were like the new thing, and I just figured out how to do stuff through an ATM machine because you could at that time. And he stopped me from doing that too. So that sucked. Did I answer that question?
Yeah, thank you. How long have you been here for?
20 years. 20 years as of September. Yeah. I'm sorry? Started going to meetings here. I relapsed once, and then after that, I did not. And you know what I did? I did anything else but I fought. I was really crazy, really, really crazy. And I picked a fight with five other families. And I fought with people. Old part named Roy gave me a gun. No bullets, but I did get the gun. I was told that I could do anything I was willing to pay the consequences for, so I did a lot of it my first year. I just didn't use. I just didn't drink. I just didn't. I went to meetings and I called people and I would cry because, you know, I wanted to go out and fight with people, but then I would go to jail and then I would lose my kids, so I couldn't do that, so I just wound up being this mess a lot. And I found somebody that, this old convict actually, that would pick me up every day and take me to a meeting, and he would read to me out of the bill as Bill sees it when I was just nuttier in the fruitcake, and there we went, and I just did that till I was done, but I just didn't drink. Oh, yeah. I wouldn't have been born. I wouldn't have come here. I'm sorry? Well, God has a way of putting stuff in my life that keeps me growing. Because I wasn't tough enough. I didn't think that I was tough enough. If I felt like I could have been one of those really good bad guys, you know, then I probably would have been mad at myself anyway, but that's what I told myself. I just wasn't good enough. No, it was not.
Well, thank you, Marcy. Thank you very much.